ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 2 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड अजामिल डिलीवर्ड बाय द विष्णु दूतास टेक्स्ट 12 नैकांतिकम् ते पि नैकांतिकम् तद्धिकृते पि निष्कृते मन पुनर्धावति चेदसत्पते तत्कर्म निर्हारम अभिपाप्सतम् हरेर् गुणानुवाद खलु सत्वभावना ट्रांसलेशन द रिचुअलिस्टिक सेरेमनीज ऑफ अटोनमेंट रिकमेंडेड इन द रिलीजियस स्क्रिप्चर्स आर इनसफिशियंट टू क्लींस द हार्ट एब्सोल्यूटली बिकॉज आफ्टर अटोनमेंट वन्स माइंड अगेन रन्स टुवर्ड्स मटीरियल एक्टिविटीज कॉन्सिक्वेंटली फॉर वन हु वांट्स लिबरेशन फ्रॉम द फ्रूटिव रिएक्शंस ऑफ मटीरियल एक्टिविटीज The chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra or glorification of the name, fame and pastimes of the Lord is recommended as the most perfect process of atonement because such chanting eradicates the dirt from one's heart completely. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The statements in this verse have been confirmed previously in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.17. Shinvatam Sakatha Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Ridyantastohi Abdhani Vidunoti Suritsatam. Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who relishes his messages, which are in themselves virtuous, when properly heard and chanted. It is the special mercy of the Supreme Lord that as soon as he knows that one is glorifying his name, fame and attributes, he personally helps cleanse the dirt from one's heart. Therefore, simply by such glorification, one not only becomes purified, but also achieves the results of pious activities, Punya Shravana Kirtana. Punya Shravana Kirtana refers to the process of devotional service. Even if one does not understand the meaning of the Lord's name, pastimes or attributes, one is purified simply by hearing or chanting of them. Such purification is called Sattva Bhavana. One's main purpose in human life should be to purify his existence and achieve liberation. As long as one has a material body, one is understood to be impure. In such an impure material condition, one cannot enjoy a truly blissful life, although everyone seeks it. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.1 says, Tapo Divyam Putraka Yena Sattvam Shuddhayet. One must perform tapasya, austerity, to purify his existence in order to come to the spiritual platform. The tapasya of chanting and glorifying the name, fame and attributes of the Lord is a very easy purifying process by which everyone can be happy. Therefore, everyone who desires the ultimate cleansing of his heart must adopt this process. Other processes such as karma, jnana and yoga cannot cleanse the heart absolutely. In the continuing wonderful story of Ajamil, which gives great hope to devotees. Here in the chapter on the Ajamil delivered by the Vishnu Dutas, Prabhupada has repeatedly said in the previous purports and more so here, the essence of our of the Krishna consciousness movement and the essence of life itself, that because devotees or non-devotees, everybody in the, at least in India, have been in touch with rituals. And one of the biggest differences between our biggest contributions of Srila Prabhupada has been the sheer clarity of the role of rituals in Vaishnava's life. Because, at least in my personal case, and probably in most cases, I would say, in most Hindu households, rituals are generally mistaken for religion. And Prabhupada makes this point repeatedly clear right through his various purports and very clearly here, that there are so many people who are following their own principles and their own understanding of religion and spiritual life. And the ritualistic path is considered to be, or just following the rituals is considered to be the be-all and end-all, which means that the form is more important than the substance. The external style and the need to you miss the wood for the trees, as the English saying goes. That means you are looking for the minor details and you miss the essence. And Prabhupada strongly mentions in these chapters that your spiritual life is not improving. There is no question of any progress if you are not going to understand the essence of what bhakti is and what is the role of devotional service and how one can implement it in practical life. So therefore, spiritual life or real religious life, first of all, means that one makes advancement only if we are to make advancement towards Godhead. That means we have to come closer to God. We need to follow what the Supreme Lord is saying, and not just for material gains, not for our own profit, because most of the rituals are ultimately for some material gain. I mean, if I see in my life, right, either whatever the Satyanarayan pujas, or during, now Diwali will come, so you have the Lakshmi pujas, suddenly all these books will come out and we will worship them as if they will produce the profit, and we are invoking. So it is only at the time that we need, when we want some gains, we go to the temples on auspicious days. And and this is really the herd mentality. You can see suddenly millions of people, literally millions on auspicious days, queuing up to come to the temple. So it is nice. I mean, it is, at least it's better than not doing anything. But if we want to make spiritual progress, one has to understand that visiting temples or following rituals has to be with a meaning. And the real meaning and essence is that there has to be austerity, there has to be tapasya. As Prabhupada says, that because we are in an impure condition, we cannot purify ourselves. There is no purity without without some tapasya. There cannot be an automatic purification process without any, no pain, no gain. So there has to be some austerity. But this process is such which that this purification process, which initially seems extremely difficult, becomes easy if it is done with a sincere mind. So basically, this is the first point that we need to know, that the spiritual and religious goals should not be for going to the heavenly abodes or for material profit or for gains. And the tendency that we seek is to adjust material life such that we can seek happiness and then bring it down to our conception of spiritual life. Instead of actually first finding what is the reality, what is the truth, and then adjusting our lives according to the truth. So this adjustment is what we seek and which everybody then finds compartments in their own lives for everything. And then we are self-seeking and we are patting ourselves saying that we have done, we have set our quotas for various activities and we have convinced ourselves that this is the right process. So each one becomes his own spiritual master. So Srimad Bhagavatam says, Savai Pumsam Paro Dharmo Yatho Bhaktir Adoksaja. So the first class religion, first class process is that which really elevates one to the path of Krishna Bhakti, to the path of pure devotional service. That is the real essence. And that Bhagavad Dharma is actually, there is no non-different from Sanatana Dharma, which is eternal religion. So it is not something which is different for different people or different ages. It is for all living entities, all human beings. And therefore here, when it is said that Naikantikam tadhi krite pinish krite, that the cleansing of the heart means the freeing of all contaminations. These contaminations means because we are associating with the three modes of material nature, that if even if one becomes free from all contaminations, it is not sufficient because the mind is so disturbing, it's so fluctuating that even after we rid ourselves of all contaminations, it will come back towards material activities. So we will again then be pulled to the sinful activities. And therefore one has to go to the root, that first to understand that it's very difficult to control the mind. As Arjun himself has told Krishna that it's very difficult to control the mind. And if he cannot do it, there is no scope of any one of us doing it. So therefore, the only way is to understand, as Srila Prabhupada has put it to us, that Krishna consciousness, spiritual life, shows us the technique of how we can dovetail our life with devotional service. And through that, understand the real Sanatana Dharma. And you can see in... we may have come to the temple in any different way, but after coming to the world of ISKCON, to the real understanding of Vaishnava Dharma, we see that there is, compared that with all the different backgrounds of people coming, not just in Radha Gopinath temple or in Bombay or in India, but all over the world, people come from completely different backgrounds, different cultures and different ages. And there is room for everyone. This is the revolutionary aspect of Krishna consciousness, that the technique of Krishna consciousness is applicable to all. For instance, come in touch with books. On book distribution, first of all, when Prabhupada started, he was translating at a feverish pace. He wrote more than 80 volumes, and now the publishing of that, the editing, printing, typesetting, that engaged so many hundreds of devotees all over, which led to the BBT being established, and it is printing. The Bhagavad Gita is the second largest book published in the world ever in the history of mankind, after the Bible. So that has engaged so many activities. Then the books have, then the distribution of books, so many devotees are engaged in that. Devotees come to the temple, the over 400 centers which have been built Building the temples, many have been built or constructed by devotees or actively participated in them, from the architecture to the construction. Then the deities, installation of deities, the understanding of the rituals and the worship of the deities. Again, hundreds of and thousands of devotees are engaged all over, trying to understand the background to it. So we can see then the lifestyles of devotees, wherever they are, there are so many common aspects. We have festivals. Even each festival, we have now Janmashtami coming, and we can see that in one temple, one festival, how many devotees are engaged in such a long time. The excitement, the anxieties, the planning, and so on. Just one festival, and we have so many festivals. Then the Rath Yatra, which has become a unique aspect of ISKCON, which is really the stamp, you can say, one of the USPs of ISKCON, which is no other movement has. Now that itself has been, because all this is really to bring Krishna consciousness and the holy name to the millions of people on the road. Then in culture also, we have dramas, so many drama troupes are there, art. I mean, there are hundreds of paintings, so which are incredible, beyond imagination how just a human could do such masterful work. Going to the colleges, going to starting restaurants, there is and most of these, almost all these services are directly manned by devotees. Of course, we also have the hospital. And then prasad distribution has been one of the backbones of almost all the temples in various parts of the world at all times, particularly in the war strife times also. So farm communities, so there is no aspect of life, nobody educated or not, woman or man, in any part of the world, whether it's in South America or Africa or any other continents, it is a really truly the demonstration of the sweeping aspects of Krishna consciousness, that it is just a matter of our consciousness, whether one and a desire, whether we want to bring Krishna in our life. Nobody can really say that it is not practical. What to speak of prasadam? I mean, it is given a totally new definition to millions of vegetarians all over the world, hundreds of millions, of what really prasadam actually is. This is one of the specialties of ISKCON, that especially outside India, that the ISKCON temples and farm centers, their prasad is usually the best. People, even those who are not very spiritually inclined, but if they're vegetarians, many Jains, this is routine. If they have to go outside India, they always look for an ISKCON center because they know they will get the best, and even the locals. So we can see that we are a tiny cog in the wheel, very very small. But how Prabhupada in 12 years he really established the practicality of Krishna consciousness and the truth, as he has been saying as per the Bhagavatam, that the true religion, the first class religion, is one which is elevates one to Krishna consciousness. So basically the technique of bringing Krishna in our life and transcending just the mere forms and the rituals and mistaking them as the be-all and end-all, this breaking through this trap which almost the practically the almost most of the 800 or 700 million Hindus would be really misunderstanding. I think this is Prabhupada's has established that in only in 12 years. So from that we can see that it is ultimately a matter of balancing our life. And once Prabhupada gave a very good example of how one can balance, because when he was asked that, I know how difficult it is, he said, you go to the village and see how there are so many village, the women, when they draw the water from the well and then they're carrying the pot, you know, it is so thin and frail and small-bodied, and they're carrying a huge pot, and then they walk miles without dropping a single water. So it is ultimately an art of balancing. So Prabhupada said at that time that if you mold your life in such a way that you allow Krishna to be in your life, to bring Krishna in one form or the other, use your intelligence to bring, to find ways of bringing Krishna in your life, and also to have the determination to seek that association which will enable you to add Krishna to your life. Both these things, the intelligence is there. Krishna has given everyone the common sense and the intelligence to dictate our mind what is the right thing to do. And at the same time, we have to then spur that to bring the determination. So with these two, we can take it to the sat pate, as it is said here that this is asat pate, that the wrong asat pate is for material activities. So to turn it to the spiritual activities, Krishna has, through Prabhupada, given us this technique. So therefore, this adjustment in our life has to be based on dharma. Everyone has to make adjustments, but if we don't have the Krishna conscious understanding, then the adjustment will be based on our own sense gratification, sense enjoyment, that what we would like to do, then we will let our mind convince us that this is, and we have enough examples to always take. The mind will always pick and say, we have, the majority would be following the wrong path, so then we would be tempted to get convinced by that. And the guide for that, to know whether we are on the right path, is, as Narottam Das Thakur has said, sadhu shastra guru vakya. So we have the sadhu and we have the shastra and the guru. All the three are, because sadhu is the genuine holy acharyas who are, in fact, they have described to us the shastras. And the shastras are nothing but what has been spoken by the sadhus. Sadhus follow the shastras. The shastras are really the descriptions given by the sadhus. And the guru follows both the sadhu and the shastra. So if we hear this, the guru, sadhu and the shastra, and keep that, and they're always in consonance, then those descriptions will always push us on the right path. And Prabhupada, when he was asked that it is easy to say but so difficult to follow, Prabhupada said that he was giving an example that his school teacher has, used to tell him. The school teacher was always pushing the children to keep scoring a distinction, you know, which is the highest category, like above 70%. So Prabhupada said that when the students used to complain to the teacher and say that, I mean, it's too much, the teacher said that if you aim for 70% or more, if you aim for distinction, then you get first class. If you aim for first class, you will get second class. If you aim for second, you will get third class. If you aim for third class, you will definitely fail. So therefore, we have to always aim for something higher. And if we push ourselves for that, we have to expect more than our capacity. To push ourselves for more, then, you know, at the time of the examination, we may be able to get pass marks, possibly. So this Kirtaniya Sadahari, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, is something which, since we cannot do it in a literal sense, we are not on that level, then we find the equivalent of being in devotional service at all times. And we must know that the fear of adjusting to the material world, if you adjust to the material world without understanding of Krishna consciousness, there is no way we can adjust without committing sinful activity. So this fear also can goad us into, one is the attraction or the desire, which will come at times and it takes time to take root. But the other is through the understanding of Shastra and common sense, we do know, we have seen our own lives and others, that adjusting to material life, meaning doing it our own way, you cannot fault the Shastras. Once you have gone through it, once you have heard, and you know that it is this is sinful life, then no matter what, it is always at the back of our minds. You cannot get away from the fact. This is impossible to fool. Even if you completely try to get away, seemingly being away from devotees and Krishna consciousness completely, but you cannot. And this, I had seen a video of many children of Krishna consciousness, you know, those who are in the 70s. They really took some very lovely videos of the small children, and it was very attractive to see. These were among the earliest videos I had seen in the mid-80s about these children of Krishna consciousness. And then they took out one about 5-6 years ago. Okay, what happened to these children? So it was not that rosy. So there were 7 children, it was in Australia, so there were 7 children that they tracked. And then, say, 4 of them were active, 3 of them were not. And, you know, somebody was in the serving in the bar, somebody was, those who were not active. But it was, all of them did say that, you know, that they understand what it is. It's a matter of time. But nobody said that this is all nonsense. It is not possible. And even if you do say it, you cannot get away from it internally. So, in fact, this is also, I would say, a blessing for us, that this truth, once you have seen even the smallest, tiniest glimpse, we cannot get away from that at all times. I always quote our Sridhar Maharaj. He used to say this. This one statement is stuck in my mind. He said, the most, he said, 99.99% of the people are always in, you know, in anxiety and worry. Either you have to be a pure devotee or a complete fool to be without any anxiety. And I think we are probably neither. So we are in the 99.99%. So this is actually our good fortune that it is that we are given both the pros and the con, the plus and the minuses of Krishna consciousness. And this is something which only experience can tell. Once we have heard and seen and experienced it, then even if we try to seek other pastures, there is no way we can get away from that. So basically, Prabhupada talks about the purification process, and he has very often spoken in the, always quoted the Shikshashtakam prayers, and the first one, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, where which he quotes really to say that, and give the example of how the heart has to be cleansed, and the dirt that is accumulated, that you know, it is accumulated over millions of years of a non-Krishna conscious life. So having come to it, the cleansing process, it takes time, but it has to be done. And this cleansing of the mirror, you know, it only when we actually see, remove the dirt, can we actually see the true self. So for us, what we need to see is that the process is what is important. It is not the end result. We have the faith in the words of the Shastra and in the guidance from Guru and other Vaishnavas, that the process works, others have followed it. And just seeking their example and guidance, we can stick to this path of purification, which involves tapasya, which involves major adjustments in our life, which involves constant struggle. At times it is very happily done. At times we find it overburdening. But just hanging on and holding on to the edges, not letting go, is really the trick. And not letting go, again, we discussed that kind of variety of techniques that Prabhupada has shown, the method of remaining Krishna consciousness, attaching Krishna in so many ways. So there are some which may be more direct, some which may be not so direct. But finding the path which is suitable at that time could really take us on the progress to genuine spiritual life. So this we have seen about the purificatory process, and we understand the philosophy. And today happens to be the disappearance day of two very great personalities who have actually lived their life, and very different personalities. So we'll speak briefly about them also. This is the disappearance day of Raghunandan Thakur and Bansidas Babaji Maharaj. We take Raghunandan Thakur. He was a son of Mukundadas. There were three brothers, Mukund, Shri Mukundas, Shri Madhavdas, and Shri Narhari Sarkar Thakur. They were all from Shikhanda, which is where Raghunandan Thakur was born. And he was an extraordinary and a very special devotee from the beginning, right from childhood. He came from a very unique lineage, because his father, Shri Mukunda, was a pure devotee, a very great associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was a doctor in the court of the Muslim king. And he was always absorbed in Krishna. Whatever he did, he was connected to Krishna. A very nice example is given. A story is said that when he went to the court, and the king was sitting on the throne on an elevated level, and Mukunda sat as per his custom at a low level, half elevated seat, and he was giving him medical advice and asking about his health. And then the servant of the king came with a peacock feather to fan the king. And just seeing the peacock feather reminded Mukunda of Krishna so much that he went into ecstasy and he fainted. And when he fainted, the king and others thought that maybe he has died or seriously ill. So they were very concerned. But then gradually it took time for him to come back to consciousness. But when he came back to consciousness, Mukunda tried his best to minimize, and he was so humble, and he didn't want to tell them what was the situation. So he tried to give other reasons, said, I have epilepsy. But the king, though he was a Muslim king, he could understand that this was a very high-level devotee, and he had great respect for him. So he, with great respect, he sent him home. So, and all the three brothers, Mukunda, Madhav, and Narhari Sarkar Thakur, all three used to go to Jagannath Puri at least once a year, generally during the Rath Yatra times. So once when they had gone there to participate in the dancing and the kirtans, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke to him once very affectionately and asked him, Mukunda, between you and Raghunandan, your son, who's the father and who's the son? And instantly Mukunda said that Raghunandan is the father, because through him my Krishna consciousness is revived. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled and said, yes, your judgment is correct, that whoever takes us gives us Krishna Bhakti and takes us on the path is actually our guru and our father. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had ordered this little boy, Raghunandan, he gave him only one service from the beginning, and that was to serve the deities. And they had a deity of Gopinath. So Raghunandan had naturally imbibed virtually from his birth, the correct practices of proper attitude and mood to serve the deities with great devotion. But when he was still a young boy, on one occasion his father had to go on some medical trip outside. So he told Raghunandan, he called him and said that you have a very special task, because I'm not here. So you have to take care of Gopinath, and particularly at the appointed time, you see that he's properly fed also. So And then he left. So Raghunandan was very diligent, very conscientious. So at the appointed time, he was very fond of offering laddus, because he saw the father was always offering. So at the appointed time, he went with a plate of laddus and he offered it to Gopinath. And as per his own understanding, which was very with a clean heart, with full of devotion, he offered the laddus and he waited. So it didn't appear to him that Gopinath was partaking of the prasad. So he sat and he was talking to Gopinath. He said, "You eat. You are not eating." So naturally, I mean, we have been explained that Krishna has, you know, he has prasad. He has all his senses are can be used at any time. So he actually feasts. He eats from his other senses also. But Gopinath here to reciprocate with the intense devotion of Raghunandan. Because Raghunandan was insisting and started crying. And that, "No, no, you must eat. My father has said you have to eat, you are not eating." So then Gopinath actually stepped off the altar and he ate all the laddus. And so then in the evening when, Raghunandan was very happy. So in the evening when his father came, and then his father asked him that, where is the Mahaprasad? So at that time he told him, Raghunandan said, "No, but father, Gopinath ate everything. So what would be our reaction? I mean, if our son was to say that, I mean," so naturally even he also felt that he had grave doubts. Though it was not as bad as we think, because in our case it would clearly be, there's no question about it. But he had a sense that his son was very sincere and genuine, but still, this was too much to bear. So his first reaction was quite incredulous, and he did feel that his son has taken it. But he said, no, I have not. You know, Gopinath has taken the Mahaprasad. He took everything. So then, since he had a little doubt, so he told him that, okay, you now offer him again. So he again offered him, and this time Mukunda was hiding and seeing. And he actually saw with great amazement that how Gopinath stepped out, and but because Gopinath had already eaten, he was completely full, so he only had half a laddu, because it was too much. So he left half and he ate half. So it is said that even now they offer half a laddu. I'm not sure, but I think that is one of the stories I heard. Mukunda then was overcome with emotion, and he was overwhelmed to see the intense devotion of his son and how Gopinath has actually reciprocated. So he understood that he really embraced his son and sat him on his lap, and he was weeping. So this shows the extraordinary greatness of this little boy, Raghunandan, who grew up to be one of the very great associates. He also, he and Abhiram Gopal Thakur, they used to often go together. They used to dance in the Rath Yatra together. So once they had gone to a place called Akai Hutta. Akai Hut, yeah. And there when he was dancing, his anklet, which it fell off. And it fell in a pond. So that pond is still known as Nupur Kund, and it is said that in Akai Hut that Nupur is still there, which actually belonged to, which was worn by Raghunandan. There is some different view, there are two different views about Raghunandan Thakur's original form in the Krishna Leela. Some say that he was Kandarpa Manjari, and some say that he is one of the Krishna's sons in Dwarka, Kandarpa. But he also had a son, Kanai Thakur, who also became a great devotee. And even now, in Shikhanda, some of the descendants of Raghunandan Thakur and his family, they are still in Shikhanda and associated in that with that place. And the other is Bansidas Babaji Maharaj. And Bansidas Babaji Maharaj is very, first of all, he is actually of more contemporary nature, because Bansidas Babaji Maharaj was born in 1859 and was here right up to 1945. So he's a contemporary of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhakti Siddhant Maharaj. But he was very, very unusual, very special, and very unique in many ways, because he was a Babaji. And like Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, God Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, you know, the so they were bhajanandi sadhus. So not in the preaching mood, but in the mood of intense bhajans. They were completely absorbed in that, and a life of great austerities. But they practiced renunciation and austerity of a level which we cannot even imagine or imitate. And because they were all paramhansas, they need not follow the rules and regulations, because the rules and regulations are for, you know, immature devotees who are who need to have this very clear, you know, rules to follow. But those who are on the level of spontaneous devotion, as Bansidas Babaji Maharaj was, he was. So they don't need this. But at the same time, great paramahansas like Babaji Maharaj, as he was called, or Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, they could be very much misunderstood by ordinary people like us, like anybody else, because their activities are on a different level. So we see them through, and we understand them through, other great acharyas. And really, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, who actually had met him several times and had great regard for him. So it's because of their understanding and what they have passed on through the disciples. And some of the Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's disciples, that is, Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, actually stayed and worked or served under Bansidas Babaji Maharaj. So we had several first-hand accounts of his glories. So we understand it in the right way. So he was born in 1859 in a place called Majitpura, where he was oldest of seven children. There were three sons and four daughters. He was the oldest. Bhairab Chandra, his name was. Born in a very, very poor family. And he was, his father was a fisherman. So there was no question of any education because of the poverty. He was engaged in just trying to make two ends meet. But in the night hours, he would go to he had heard about this Narottam Das Babaji. Not Narottam Das Thakur, who was much earlier, but this is Narottam Das Babaji, was also a genuine devotee. So he had heard about him. So he used to go to his ashram. He used to spend several hours there with him. And of course, his parents grew very anxious, because they were worried that he will leave home. So they were pushing him for marriage. They fixed it up and they pushed him into that. But you know, his apathy for material life actually grew. And then soon after marriage, when he left his wife and 6-month-old son, became a renunciate, and then he took initiation from this Narottam Das Babaji, who gave him the name Bansidas. From Bhairab Chandra, he became Bansidas. And then later, of course, he's been known as Babaji Maharaj. So as it is, he was a very simple and austere person, but now he increased the austerity severely. And even though he had only torn dhoti and gamcha, now it turned into just a loincloth, and that's all he had. Long, you know, never cut his hair, never cut his beard. He was 6 feet tall, but he had a wild look, very almost never bathed, and completely absorbed in Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and Bhaktivinoda Thakur both together met him for the first time in 1903. And from that time, particularly Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj kept track of Bansidas Babaji, because whenever he used to visit Navadvip, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had instructed his Gaudiya Math disciples, devotees, that whenever Bansidas Babaji Maharaj comes, one of them had to be nearby always. First of all, he had given several devotees as his servants. So that is why some of them, even after Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj left, actually took shelter under Bansidas Babaji Maharaj. It is said he initiated two devotees, but it's not much known about them. But they used to at least serve him. So they were serving him before also, and then after Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj left, some of them went and were serving him. So one standing instruction was that be near him and support him, but also any remnants, you have to quietly take it and then bring it and share it with all the devotees. So that was Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's standing instructions. That was the regard he had for Bansidas Babaji Maharaj. So even among Avadhut Babaji's, his character was unique, because he had really no connection with the outside world, what was happening. And people would think he was crazy, because when they tried to speak, he had no desire to speak to people, generally. He only spoke to his deities and to a few intimate disciples. And if someone approached him with questions, if he liked that person, if he felt, because he had an amazing knack of understanding the mood and the motivation of that person. Somehow, even though he had no connection with the outside world, but he could immediately grasp it. So if he felt that this person was sincere, then he would reply, but he never ever replied directly. He would speak to the deities. So the answer would come as if he's talking in first person to the deities, and then that person gets the answer. And that also if he was a genuine person. Otherwise, so many people were disappointed, because they would come and he would just not bother. He traveled a lot. He went to all the holy places and used to walk. He was, even in his 80s, devotees who were helping him, his servants, could not keep pace with him. He was a very, very fast walker. He did very unusual things. You know, when he was not well, he would take things which he was not supposed to eat, increasing his austerity. Once when he had a severe cold, then he was having sour foods, yogurt. Sometimes he would go for days without water also. Forget food, but he would not have water. So very often he would fast. And then he would take things which he was not supposed to take. So he was very unpredictable, because he was not going by the normal conventions. He was literally living in the spiritual world. But everything he said was related to Krishna. So even though there was an incoherence, when he spoke, he would start telling stories about Krishna, about pastimes, but then he would jump from one sentence to another. So there was no connection. People would feel he's incoherent. But actually, he was, to the ordinary mind, I mean, they would be bewildered. But only those who really were of his level, of a purity of his level, could really understand how much he was attached to Krishna. He would just laugh out loud sometimes and talk to his, and he was very fond of talking to his deities. His whole world centered around his deities. He had Sri Gauranga, Sri Nityananda, Sri Gadadhar, Gopalji, which was his real favorite. He used to carry Gopalji everywhere in his hand, and Radha and Krishna deities. Even his deity worship was unique, in the sense that he was, there was no rules, regulations, nothing. There were no ringing of bells, no offering, no putting them to sleep, nothing. He would just offer them food, and then he would sometimes scold them, sometimes quarrel with them, sometimes talk to them, but with great intimacy. So it was not comprehensible to anyone who wouldn't understand him. And he never cared to try to make it simple for the others. And also he never spoke, whenever he also spoke to his intimate disciples, he never spoke in first person, he always spoke in third person. So he wouldn't say that I have to go there, he said Bansidas has to go there. So it was as if he was a different person and when he used to speak. Devotees who were near him, and some of them actually were, they're still there, who served him directly. They've related many stories of his incredible pastimes, but also, even though Babaji Maharaj had this wild look and all that, but he, there were instances, several instances where he had obviously had a lot of supernatural powers or great siddhis, which he never displayed, of course. Once when he was, there was a small 7-8 year old girl who used to come regularly when he was staying in his one kutir. That girl used to bring this pot of Ganga water and just put it and go away. So she came and she put and she was going. So so Babaji Maharaj just told her, don't go just now. He was explaining to her. He was indicating that you stay. But she didn't listen, so she was going. So she went to the doorstep. As soon as she reached the doorstep, she was outside on the first step. And he just sprung up and, pulled her in. And the very next second, there was a thunderbolt, which actually fell at the same spot where this girl was. Once it was raining very heavily, and he was staying in a two-story place. So he told his servants that, take everything to the first floor. The Ganges is coming soon. And the next day, the Ganges overflowed and everything was flooded. The people were very astonished. Once there was a person who had cholera, and he was just outside his door. For 3-4 days, he was staying outside his kutir, and he was just moaning. He wanted to die because he was in great pain, tremendous sick. So Babaji Maharaj just went to him and gave him one, put a tulsi leaf on his tongue. The next day he got up and he walked away. He was completely all right. But once when he was in his in a place where it was a very barren, he was actually in the middle of miles and miles of field. He had walked long, long distance, and it was only agricultural fields. There were no nearby villages for several miles, and it was a full moon night. So he chose to stay in the open. They said, so in the night, suddenly out of nowhere, 50 very attractive women, ladies, dressed in white, they came. And they paid their obeisances and they went away. And he just had a couple of servants with him, so they were all completely puzzled. So next day they went walked miles to find some villagers, and they were asking that, trying to find out who are these, because there were no men, no children. And in those days, almost 70, 100 years ago, women never left their homes usually without a male companion being there. So here, even in the daytime, women would not come to this place because it was so many miles and miles away. It was only fields, there were no villages. So the devotees and the villagers, they concluded that these were demigoddesses who actually had come for taking his darshan. So he was of a very, very exalted nature, and it was because of that that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and then Prabhupada instructed that his disappearance also is acknowledged as one of the among the Vaishnava Acharyas. He disappeared in 1945. He was almost 85 years old. And only when he left Majitpura, when he was where he was born, when he was just after his marriage, and then he returned and he left his body there. Majitpura is now in Bangladesh, in the east part of Bengal. But he never went inside, because as per he would always be on the outskirts wherever he went, completely all to himself. So we have these two examples of living examples of what Srila Prabhupada said in the purport, of how the glorification of the name and fame and pastimes of the Lord can really purify ourselves, our lives. Hare Krishna. Thank you. If there's any questions? Well, it is not explained here. It was just mentioned. So, like everything else, the mind of a pure devotee is very difficult to understand. So, what was in Babaji Maharaj's mind wouldn't be known. One can only speculate. But it is one of the many indications that that he was not an ordinary mortal. But really, what was in his mind would be not clear. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.